Hello, my friends. I want to start by saying, as we come to a close of another great Lausanne Congress, I love you. I'm proud of you. I'm grateful for you. I thank God for you. I pray for you, and I want to help you. Now, if you are under 40 years of age, would you just stand up real quickly? Under 40 years of age, please stand up. Okay, look at these leaders. All right, let me talk to you for just a second. I'm more impressed with this generation than four or five different generations that I've ever worked with. I'm impressed with you, and you have the potential to finish the task and complete the Great Commission. But you're going to need four things. To make it to the finish line, you're going to need mentors, models, partners, and friends. Everybody in ministry to make it to the... This is my 54th year of ministry. You need mentors, models, partners, and friends. I was 20 years old at the first Lausanne. And so I've watched this movement for 50 years. And I want to say thank you for all you're doing. If you need help anything, just email me. Okay, be seated. Now, if you are over 40, would you stand up right now? Would you stand up? All right. Those of you who just stood, the young leaders, look at the people who are over 40 around you. These are the people you should be learning from. You can learn from anybody if you know the right questions. All leaders are learners. These people have already been in ministry for years, and they can teach you things that you don't know. You may be seated. Now, my prayer for both of these groups is that you will finish well. I have given my life to finishing the task of the Great Commission, but also helping church leaders finish their race. And I want you to do both. Now, as this Lausanne ends, I just was thinking about how could I help you the most in 9 minutes? And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you an outline. It's on your table. Everybody pass them around. I'm going to give you an outline that summarizes the action steps about everything we've talked about this last week. And you take this home and you teach it. First time you say, Rick says. Second time you use it, say, it's been said. Third time you use it, you say, I've always thought. And you can teach this. It summarizes what we've talked about all week. Now, each morning we've looked at the book of Acts. And I want to take a minute to just quickly look at 10 action steps through the book of Acts. Now, I'm not going to teach this to you. I don't have time to do it. I'm not even going to cover the verses. I'm going to give you the fill-ins. So write quick. And then you take it, you add your illustrations and your stories, okay? I don't have time to teach it. The big idea between now this outline is this. The church at its birth was the church at its best. The church at its birth was the church at its best. So, what must we do to finish the task? 10 action steps from Acts chapter 1 and chapter 2. We've been talking about it all week. Number one, we must pray for God's power. You're going to have to look and read these and study these verses yourself. Prayer is mentioned many times in the book of Acts. Friends, when we start praying like they prayed in Acts, we'll start having the power like they had in Acts. There's a direct connection between prayer and power. Much prayer, much power. Little prayer, little power. No prayer, no power. Number two, we must translate God's word for everyone. God's word is alive. God's word is transforming. God's word changes life. But we have to put it in words that everybody understands. We must translate God's word for everyone. And sadly, there's still thousands, even millions of people who don't have a Bible in their translation. That's part of our next action step. Now, at Pentecost, God saw the importance of translation because he did a translation miracle with tongues. He reversed Genesis 11, the Tower of Babel, at Pentecost. we must translate God's word for everyone. Number three, we must appreciate our diversity. Not tolerate it, not accept it, but be proud of it, love it, celebrate it. We need to do this because, number one, diversity was God's idea. He thought it up. He made us all different. The person who doesn't like diversity is basically saying, God, you made a mistake. Why didn't you make everybody like me? That's the height of pride. We must celebrate and enjoy and grow on our diversity because diversity in ministry is a strength of the church, not a weakness. Why? It takes all kinds of churches to reach all kinds of people. And if you're getting the job done, I like the way you're doing it. God blesses diversity. In God's church, He wants unity. He doesn't want uniformity. Now, if you don't get anything else I say in these 6 minutes left or whatever's left, the only way we'll ever have unity is to love diversity. Write that down. The only way we'll ever have unity is to love diversity. Number four, we must train every believer to preach the good news. You know, at Pentecost, Peter had to quote Joel, the prophet, in order to explain why women were preaching at Pentecost. And here's what he says in Acts 2:14 and following. I will pour out my spirit on everyone, circle everyone, your sons and daughters, circle sons and daughters, not just sons, daughters will preach. Your young men will see vision, and your old men will have dreams. That's intergenerational. And all my servants, both men and women, circle men and women, I will pour out my spirit, and they will preach. In 2003 at Saddleback Church, we launched an every member campaign that every member in our church would go to the mission field and plant a church. Did you hear that? Every member in our church would go to the mission field and plant a church. And we took the five things that Jesus did, we call it the peace plan, proclaim the good news, equip every believer, alleviate suffering, that's for poverty, disease, illiteracy, contend in prayer, because we fight the battle on our knees, and establish churches. Over 7 years, I sent out 26,869 of my members to plant a church in every nation of the world. We're the only church in Christian history to plant a church in 197 nations. This was done by normal people. If you're a pastor, I would be honored to teach you how to do it. Your church can send missionaries around the world. You can mobilize. My goal is to help you turn an audience into an army, to turn spectators into participators, to turn consumers into contributors, to turn members into missionaries and ministers. Number five, we must apply God's word to ourselves. To finish the task, we're gonna have to practice what we preach. Jesus says, go and do likewise. James says, be a doer of the word. The Great Commission says, teach them to do everything I've commanded, not teach them to know. The problem with the church today, we know more than we're doing. And there's a certain kind of preaching that will help people become doers of the word. I don't have time to get into that. But we must apply God's word to ourselves. If you want an example of this, look at Peter's message in Acts chapter 2. It started responding to a question of people. They said, what does this mean? And his sermon ended at the end by telling people what to do. When the people heard Peter's words, they asked, what shall we do? That's what your sermon should be. Start with, what does it mean? And end with, what should I do? The problem today, a lot of messages at the end, they're still going, what does it mean? You have to teach people to be doers of the word. To train people in how to be a doer of the word. Here's a little practical tip. Put a verb in every point. Put a verb in every point to be a doer of the word. Number six, we must model love to the world. Love always attracts. My definition of evangelism, you build a bridge of love between your heart and theirs, and Jesus walks across. Growing churches love, loving churches grow. If you have a church that genuinely loves lost people, you'd have to lock the doors to keep people out. Now, a lot of people say we love, but they mean we love everybody we already know. That's not a loving church. Number seven, we must return to using homes. The fastest period of growth of the Christian church, first 330 years, we grew 50% a decade, we had no church buildings. I wanted to prove you don't have to have a church building to grow a church. So Saddleback went 13 years without a building. We had over 10,000 people coming every week before we built our first building. Don't tell me you have to have a building to grow a church. The fastest growth was through homes, and we need to go back to that. Number eight, our worship must become a joyful witness. And all I'll say about this is that worship that is celebrative attracts unbelievers just like they like to go to concerts. Number nine, we must share everything to work together. Verse 44 says, all the believers shared everything with each other. All these things I'm teaching you are in Acts 1 or chapter 2. This is real collaboration. To collaborate means to co-labor. Number 10, we must make financial sacrifices. Verse 45 says, they would sell their land and the things they owned in order to give the money to those who needed it. These are 10 things from Acts 1 and 2 that every one of you can do tomorrow on your way home from Lausanne. I love you, and may God bless you.